Good morning, everybody. And I'm very glad to be here again in Cyprus at this growing traditional Capital Link event. Thank you very much for having me, and thank you to the Deputy Minister for a very interesting start to our day. So in the next 10, 15 minutes, I'm going to decode the implications and the challenges and the opportunities around EU ETS and TLEU. We're going to give it our best shot, anyways. So first thing is really to just, let's start to look where we are today. As they do with these regulations, let's start out at the baseline. The past years have been full of regulatory developments, as you are all well aware. In 2018, we brought in EU Monitoring Report and Verification, MRV, and soon we followed with IMO DCS. Both developed to start to collect the data to monitor our emissions globally with the vessels on the water then and today. And then the IMO also brought in 2023 one of our favorite regulations, CII. Soon followed by the EU ETS in 2024, and now since 1 January 2025, we have fuel EU. As if this was not enough development, we are here in the middle of February 25, thinking, discussing, and trying to determine what agreement, if any, will be coming in MEPC 83 this April. What will it bring to our industry, and when will this affect us? Jumping quickly, taking a quick look at EU emissions trading system, there's some key points to be clear on. First, you know, it became effective from 1st of January 2024, and this year is going to be when we add it up and we actually have to start to pay in later in the year. It's effective with the larger vessels. It will come to in effect on offshore vessels of similar size in 2027. The compliance responsibility typically falls to the ship owner, but it can be transferred to the DOC holder. This is an important point to remember. You need to buy and surrender EU allowances to cover emissions for all the applicable vessels. There are fines for not compliance or failing to surrender enough allowance. The EUAs must cover up to 50% of the voyages from and to Europe and 100% of the voyages within Europe. The emissions being considered are tank to wake, and they are currently for CO2, but later in 2026 they'll cover CH4 and N2O. Taking a quick glance at what the daily potential compliance costs can be, you can see that it's not something we can't pay attention to. This graph shows the compliance costs of various tons per day over the period, assuming that the compliance of 70 euros per ton, half EU emissions, and the use of LFO. Let's say a Capesize bulker in a laden condition uses approximately 50 tons per day, or represented by the green bar on this graph. One can clearly see that this can be a significant cost that cannot be. Quickly jumping to Fuel EU Maritime. Fuel EU Maritime focuses on the type of fuel being used and not so much around how the amount of the fuel being used. Again, some of the key points that should be considered in this regulation. It started this year, 1 January 2025. Of course, most of us are aware that in August last year, they needed to submit their monitoring plans for this year. The responsibility lies with the ISM company or the DOC holder. It is not transferable. It sets targets for onboard greenhouse gases and intensities. Ships are to meet reduction targets or maintain a surplus to avoid penalties, completely separate from each EU ETS and EUA obligations. Pooling of vessels are allowed within or between fleets, and the emissions are looking at well-to-wake for CO2, CH4, and N2O. Again, taking a quick glance at what the daily compliance costs are going to be for fuel EU maritime, you can see the first thing you notice is that how much longer the application of this regulation is spread over time, starting off slowly, but clearly jumping significantly between the years of 2040 and 2050. Once again, considering a laden Capesize bulker of 50 tons a day, these costs can simply not be ignored. This graph compares the different fuel options with respect to fuel maritime and the GHG intensities in terms of GCO2E per millage, The GHG intensity of these fuels is calculated both for their well-to-tank part, the blue color, and their well-to-weight part, the red. We can quickly observe that LNG high-pressure two-stroke diesel engine can be below the industry limit imposed by the EU until 2040. We can also observe that hydrogen ammonia, when produced with natural gas, lead to a higher well-to-tank emissions compared to fossil fuels currently.
Hello.
And lastly, you can see that there's
significant.
There is an opportunity when you utilize low sulfur fuel oils with waste cooking oils. Further, taking a look at the fuel regulation and the voluntary cooling mechanism, there are definitely some considerations that need to be taken. For first scenario, one ship with wind-assisted propulsion, burning alcohol, can pull the compliance balances to match that of one vessel with similar energy transfers, burning yellow float. One burning LNG with low CH force lift can pull the compliance balance with five ships burning yellow float with the same energy consumption. And then we have one ship burning 30% biofuel can pull the compliance balance with 10 ships burning yellow float with the same energy consumption. And finally, one ship burning e-methanol can pull the compliance balance with 15 ships burning LFO at the energy consumption. Definitely something to consider moving forward with this regulation. So moving past the regulations, it's time to look a little bit deeper at some of the key points or the implications and challenges around this.
Oh, yeah.
Here are a few ones that can be considered. For EU-ETS, the owners are primarily responsible with the option to delegate to the ISM company. Unclear roles may leave responsibilities with owners if no mandate is established. Most charter party terms for ETS settlements are now in place, but there are many variations.
Inconsistencies.
There is a lack of focus on the importance of data sharing and the cooperation in managing ETS terms. And as shown before, there is clear financial exposure. Jumping over to Fuel EU Maritime, the ISM company is the legal responsible towards the authorities. Responsibilities cannot be delegated to other parties. Management of both regulatory and the commercial dimension is important. The ship manager contract should have been updated earlier this year, and the technical manager does not decide on fuel use, typically. And again, we look at the financial exposure. Jumping over to some of the key dynamics that we see developing between the technical managers, the DOC holders, and the ship owners. The technical manager is responsible, but not always willing to absorb the cost of fuel. Costs will be passed on, in most cases, to the ship owner. The technical manager will not accept all of the financial risks and the aims to help to minimize this in all cases. The ship owner needs to compensate the ship manager for fuel EU expenses. You need to provide financial guarantees, are unlikely to share in surplus benefits with the DOC holders. And many of the ship owners will prefer to make decisions regarding compliance measures. It is essential for ship owners and all of us to that reliable data for managing financial and commercial operations. In the next few slides, I want to look at a few points just to be aware of as we move through and start to utilize these regulations. First, the compensation process must be clear and established. There's no guidance in the regulations for commercial contracts between the owners and charterers and the ISM. The methods of data sharing and collaboration between the ship owner and the technical manager need to be outlined. Three, regular updates of data are essential to fulfill business management needs. Four, strategies for ensuring high quality data through the year must be developed. Continuing with item number five, it's important to be aware of the owner with access to the year info. Make sure the owner has access to certain info with the GHG intensity, the compliance balance, the compliance cost. Six, a capacity to advise on alternative compliance and associated implications if necessary. Seven, There could be many challenges when you shift to ISM companies or maybe vessel management. And finally, thing to be aware of would be that collaboration and the exchange of compliance balance play a key role
in these regulations.
Having looked at all these and considered what we have, I want to take a quick snapshot of some of the things that we see, how this compliance can be managed with different levels and from different perspectives, particularly looking at the ship owner, the ISM company, the VOC holder, and the charterers. So first off, looking at the ship owner, it's important to update commercial contracts to make sure we include for coverage through the UETS to assure access to high quality data that is in a format that enables efficient management. Develop practices that are suitable for the future as financial implications grow and strengthen. Conduct analysis of very compliant offices fulfilled with requirements. Be ready to document the fuel EU compliance balance at the contract term. Moving over to the ISM company, ensure that the ship has verified monitoring plans. For the fuel EU, ensure the ship management contracts have been updated recently this year and share in the high quality data with the owners and potentially the charterers. From the charterer's perspective, ensure to receive the maximum of this benefit from the fuel that generates a surplus compliance. Increase the use of compliant fuel as much as possible. Receive data for the management of emissions and ensure that any agreements with the owners, operators regarding fuel EU ETS are reliable and clear. And the last key thing to focus on is that success begins with high quality data and collaboration on this topic. Now that we've looked at all of these implications, all of these challenges, there must be some positiveness out of these regulations, some things that need to be there. I've outlined some four opportunities that I'd like to take a look at. First off, is that when companies work with these regulations, they can align their strategies with both regulations and optimize their operations, help to reduce their emissions, and potentially benefit from the market mechanisms and the price of carbon emissions. Two, fuel EU surplus compliance holds a significant value as it can be utilized to bring non-compliant vessels into compliance. Three, companies that have already developed robust decarbonization strategies and established procedures will likely gain a competitive advantage. And four, opportunities for innovation and investment in clean energy technologies are there and developing forward for each day. Finally, I can't finish this presentation without a little bit of self-promotion on ABS and how we can support you with the compliance towards these regulations. At ABS, we have some simple solutions, the key ones being our carbon diligence platform and our emissions reporter and other services. You know, for more information on these services and how ABS can support you here in Cyprus and Athens, please reach out to our local teams. And with that, I just want to thank everybody here for their attention, and I wish you all a great year at Capital Leaders Day. Thank you.